Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome everybody to Roll to Cast. This is the post-season transmission. This is the wrap-up episode for this year, season 8, that you've please say you've finished it before you've come to this episode.
No, skip around.
I've just got it on random.
Start here.
Those that are unaware, this is kind of our chance to debrief, to talk about the season that was, amongst ourselves, favorite moments, least favorite moments, questions we may have, but also questions you may have. We've extended this transmission, sent our own little beacon out, and we've asked for you to ask your little questiony poos, and that's what we're going to be doing here today.
Oh, how cute!
How's everyone feeling?
Good. Oh, we've been pretty, hard at it today.
Pretty wiped, to be honest.
Yeah.
So we have been recording the following season. Can we announce at the end of this episode?
I think by this time people will know.
Yeah, and if you don't know,
people will know.
If you don't know, hang out to the end of this episode, and our new GM Ellen, whose turn it is, will reveal.
Oh, we couldn't get Brennan Lee Mulligan? Fuck.
Nah.
Shit.
So maybe next time.
The next thing we'll do.
He's doing season 10.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Stay tuned.
But this is Starfinder, baby. And I think one of the first things that we can talk to and talk about and talk with is our brand new cast member for this season, Inkarma.
Woo!
Yeah, I was gonna say, speak for yourselves. I haven't been here all day. I've just gotten here, so I'm.
And speak for ourselves. We did.
I think I'm a little more with it. Is that okay to say?
Lucid.
So yes. From that experience of lucidity, what was it like playing with us on Roll the Cast?
Yeah, coming into this whole. Because it's one thing to like play with a new group and like a new system, but this was that plus being recorded in perpetuity until long after you die.
Forever and ever. Yeah, it was like a lot of those layers, but I think, I mean, it wasn't the first time that I've role played with you guys, so it was okay from that aspect.
I was going to say, what came first, us role playing casually together, or do we start Starfinder first?
Like,
what was the crossover?
Mouse Guard, right?
We did Mouse Guard.
Remember what came first?
We did Mouse Guard almost in preparation for this season.
That's right.
To get Karma kind of acclimated to how we as
to the group.
I was going
to
say a foursome, and that's probably wrong.
Acclimated to this foursome.
Yeah, there you go.
So I think that made it. You know, that made it easy in terms of, like, I know you guys' personality and all of that was pretty straightforward, and none of that was a surprise to me. But definitely the fact that it was being recorded was the one hurdle for me. Like, I was cool with learning the system. I was cool with all of that. But constantly just forgetting that was kind of the goal, was to, you know, step one, speak into the mic. Like, that was like the last thing on my mind.
Than you
so
think.
Honestly.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So that was kind of like the last thing on my mind, and then I would suddenly remember and be like, oh god, I have to, you know, think about that.
It's an entertainment product.
Yeah. But no, it was a lot of fun.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah. I think you were great.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's always wonderful to have like a new guest on Rodcast because it brings this fresh air in this dank, dusty fucking studio. like you know, because we all do know each other and know how we kind of inherently play and all of that. But then having you come into the studio, it's just like, whoa, such a rush of energy.
It
feels so fun. And I love having guests.
It's kind of interesting to think about like what could have been as well, because I know that the Yosoki wasn't your initial character pitch, because I know initially you thought about potentially playing an android before Ellen had taken the role of android. I remember you talked potentially about flirting with that. And I guess I was going to ask as well, do you gravitate to sci-fi stories very often, or is this kind of outside of your comfort zone in terms of the kind of stories or media you engage with? Like, kind of what's your flirtation with sci-fi, and especially after the fact now that you've done it?
Yes, for sure. I think that's honestly why I was immediately drawn to playing an android, because I do really like sci-fi and it's one of my favorite genres in general. And so that is instantly kind of the most sci-fi option. And I think that's why I was drawn to it straight away. I was thinking about it and I just didn't have any strong inclinations of like a particularly character or personality that went along with that. Like, I liked the idea of it, but there wasn't much else going on. And then when I was looking through the races and I was reading about Yosokis, I was like, oh, there's immediately a picture in my head of who this guy is. And so it became very easy to flesh that out. And so I switched tactics pretty early on after starting to read the kind of source book.
So I know no one picked Vesk, which was actually the biggest surprise to me. I was so
really?
Sure. I was so sure Phil was going to pick a Vesk.
A big, they're the
big
angry
lizard folk.
Right? Lizard man. Yeah.
Big militaristic lizard folk.
No, I needed another robot companion. Apparently. Which has got nothing to do with your race. I could have been a Vesk.
Yeah, you could.
Engineer.
Yeah, you could have still been an engineer.
Yeah, that's true. No, I found the telepathic bugs to be most interesting from a sci-fi perspective. I love sci-fi as well, and I love the kind of, you know, strange new worlds kind of aspect of it, and so the kind of curious, collaborative idea behind the Sheeran really appealed to me.
And I know for Ellen, for you as well, one thing that you'd been very open about is that this is like one of your like least prepped seasons in terms of the way you approach the character.
Oh yeah,
which I always found like interesting, because obviously
sounds unprofessional of me to say, but
are you kidding me?
This
is easily my least prepared season as a GM. Like, comparatively to Pulp Cthulhu, this is far and away a very underprepped season in terms of how I approached it. But I was kind of curious, like how that. I not only affected your stress levels, but also because you are the protagonist of this story. Like,
yeah,
this is like Arda's story.
It was one thing to be like, I had the conversation. Hey, Sean, I'm really swamped with other projects. You know, like, I'm coming up towards Fringe time, and I'm doing my own solo show, and you know, all of these other projects kind of coinciding. So it's going to be very like, I've got a main idea, and that's where everything kind of hinges on. Like, that's going to make me decide my race. That's going to make me decide like my class, and all of the kind of role play is just going to follow on that really, really, really strong idea. And then you were like, oh, I'm thinking this is going to be your character's like story. You're going to be the protagonist. I was like, cool.
Well, fuck.
Cool. No worries. I've deliberately picked a character that's got a very flat like effect and is learning about it, like emotions on the fly. Cool. No.
Well, that means
you
got the most room to grow, right? So,
and it very much felt that kind of like, you know, the old cliche of like sometimes the protagonist, especially in a video game, is the most like, not that your character was boring, but it is like the most like flat, easy character, because you're meant to impose yourself onto the main character of a video game. That's the idea, right?
Yeah.
But it was so cool, especially from a sci-fi setting, to go, oh, here's a character that literally is learning as they go, which is kind of what also was the impulse for me to instigate the conflict that I did, which is what if they weren't aware of their past, and what if things had happened to them without their consent, without their knowledge?
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely had the most to be learning throughout the season, which I think worked for that.
Yeah, where I feel, Phil's pointing her across the table.
This is the one I want to know about.
Yeah.
Where, let's get to like, the meat of the matter.
Where was the origin for this unholy devotion to a dark power? Did that come from?
I would love to know about this from Chris as well, because what's funny is Chris and I did not collaborate on this. I gave everyone carte blanche to come up with the character that they wanted to come up with.
Yeah.
And it was only after, like, Chris was the final piece of the puzzle, because I was struggling on exactly where I was going to go in terms of where the antagonistic conflict would settle on. Mm. And as soon as Chris was like, oh, I'm a member of the Cult of the Devourer, I was like, oh, fucking perfect. Because I know the Cult of the Devourer. I just don't know how you know the Cult of the Devourer. So yeah, I'm curious about this too.
This is probably one of the characters I've spent the most amount of time on. The most amount of research, the most amount of like voice practice. Zahak's voice was not supposed to sound as it sounded, but I picked something and went with it. But I spent probably, this is, and Karma and I are dating, and so it was a big joy to be able to bring my boyfriend into the podcast and collaborate with him. So there was a lot of consideration for how those characters were supposed to work. And when you've built character background with another player, both of you kind of trust each other to have justified decisions and to have comprehensive like understanding of how they're going to work, right? There's no sense in having characters who are on side with each other if you're constantly having to discover what your character is going to do in that moment. You kind of have to know it so that you can rely on each other, so that they can build like camaraderie there. Like,
there's that built-in background already ready to go.
Exactly, because otherwise what's the point, right? If you're still discovering your own character and you've got a partner, then you aren't... then they have nothing to work with.
Yeah.
Right, so you have to be kind of strong in that mode. And I remember Sean... in the pre-discussion discussing the influences for the game.
Yeah.
Right, and we had this conversation in pre-production before we all recorded, before any of our like episode zero
before
chat.
Before the pre-season chat. Yeah,
exactly right. Was Sean saying, it's a bit like Firefly and it's a bit like Mass Effect. And I know Sean and Ellen have played Dragon Age and Mass Effect and the kind of BioWare series, right? They're fairly familiar with those BioWare series. And I drew influence from the first BioWare game that is kind of popularized the series and kind of set a lot of precedents, which is Baldur's Gate 1. In Baldur's Gate 1, you leave your kind of like native town as your protagonist, and you meet two people along the path, and they're fucking evil. They're just bad people.
Okay.
But because the game is set out in such a way, they appear to be good people. You inherently trust them, right?
So you can bring them on board.
You bring them into your party. They're like the first team that you get, along with another person that you grew up with, right? She's kind of like your thief. And then you met these two people. They give you healing potions. They say, hello, hi, welcome. What are you here for? If you're a smart, savvy person, you go into their backstory and you see that they're evil. But if you're not, they're just two people that you've picked up along the way. And so
sounds familiar.
Right? And so
Hey, we've all been there.
It's all coming together now.
And so I was very aware of the fact that, A, I wanted to play those characters. One of them is a wizard, one of them is a spellcaster, and one of them a human spellcaster, and one of them is a halfling fighter rogue. And I was like, okay, Karma seems to be leaning towards this rogue sort of character. I can play this kind of what is it? The big to your small, the kind of like there's the kind of antithetical,
the serious to my batshit crazy,
And so all of that
the
was
rock
kind of
steady to your bebop.
There you go.
Yes.
And so all of that was kind of fitting in together, and I'm like, great, cool. This is a reasonable character. I stole the voice from John Irenicus from Baldur's Gate 2, and I was like, cool. This is all tracking. And I was like, well, is that going to be fun to play with? Is playing just a flat-out evil character going to be fun to play with? And I was like, yes, because he doesn't have to be evil.
Like, all the time.
Well, and this is sort of the thing, and the promise I made to myself was that we have a protagonist, and we kind of established that fairly early. I was like, my character is going to be entirely malleable to them.
Right.
Because in the BioWare games, when you as the protagonist go out and talk to your like party members, whether you're like, you know, in Dragon Age and you're campfiring and you give them gifts or you chat to them, or you're in like Mass Effect or whatever, you can convince them to change their alignment, to shift their perspective. And so I was like, oh, great. I'll be that character.
Yeah.
And so the concept was, I'll play a nihilist. I'll play a young nihilist because Zahak is really, really young. He's quite naive. And he's flexible to the party. The party needs a healer. There we go. That's a character.
Hell so yeah. What was your history, the two of you? Because we never kind of
dug it
out of you.
It seemed like the no wrong answers picked you up as a kind of pair. You had had your own history together, just as Clink and Arda kind of had their own, you know. So we never quite got the full...
We know you're a criminal.
Cool well, sketching yes. there, yeah.
Yeah, I started by... Because we built our characters kind of together, but I finished mine first, and I kind of have built this backstory of basically a speed run of his whole
yeah.
life of like Akaton, and then going to several other locations, you know, being caught by several different
Versailles,
going to Versailles, kind of fucking things up there, being chased out off the planet by their government, and then fleeing to the diaspora, where obviously he eventually became a free captain for a while. And then it wasn't until Chris had finished building Zahak that we talked about why they were drawn to each other in the first place, which we ended up falling on it being because Pinch is so unpredictable and chaotic. He's chaotic neutral. He's not necessarily going to be evil all the time, but he very much doesn't care about a lot of what other people are doing. And I think it was you, Chris, who said, like, Zahak adopts him as an agent of chaos, essentially.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
like, I have this tiny destructive thing that will follow me if I protect him, so why not bring right. him along and kind of
revel in the chaos that
yes,
he creates.
Yes, okay. kind of forge a path for me to, as the stronger one of the duo,
right.
for him to kind of forge a path for me to then just wreak havoc.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So there are a couple of questions that the audience, our listeners, have given us that will flesh out some of those things. But is there any, I'll open up to you guys, is there any questions that you had for me? We usually open up a player to GM section as well. Are there any questions that you want to ask of me?
Is there anything we missed? Any details or like big reveals that we should have found?
Anything we just missed, like dodged yeah, completely?
And you're like, ah, oh, damn, I wish they had discovered that breadcrumb that I left for them.
No, and that's predominantly because I adopted a very different way of writing this season.
Yeah.
Where I wrote in batches. Whereas in, I had not written the second recording at the time that we recorded the first recording.
Yeah.
I then was I knew dot points. I knew the one thing that I knew for certain, and this is something that we'll get into later, but the whole crux of a season was boiling down to me getting you onto the Omenbringer and having the standoff between Zahak and Arda.
You had an end point. And you just
I was orchestrating
to get
towards that point. I was like, if I can get just a big standoff between you two, having no idea where Pinch and where Clink were at this point, because at this point, I didn't know how attached
yeah.
they were as secondary characters.
Yeah.
I just needed you two in that room. And I had different points peppered in, but everything else, I was like, I don't quite know, and I want to be malleable to what happens at each recording. Also, I was pressed for time.
Yeah.
But I was like, let's see what happens if I'm writing as we go, because there'll be things that I can discover. Dr. Zvoon didn't come in until the night before we recorded.
Oh, okay.
That was a break where I was like, oh, that's where the story's heading.
Right.
And Dr. Zvoon is actually a character from my casual group.
Oh, right. Okay.
I've got a friend, Charlotte, who plays in my casual Starfinder game. And I was like, oh, I want a Sheeran. Can I borrow your character, Dr. Zvoon? Can I use her? She gave me her character sheet, and that's what I used for the fight with the Glass Serpent.
Oh, nice.
So
nice.
I got to use her character with her permission, which was very lovely.
Yeah.
But yeah, in answer to your question, because of that, because I was able to be more malleable in those moments, I would very much situate, I reckon they're going to do one of a couple of things, and I had accounted for, like, if you do this, I can still get you to here, sort of thing. So it was actually I was a lot better prepared. And also, by this point, you guys are very kind and were like, we know where we're going with this, so we can, like, head towards that sort
yeah.
of thing.
Is there anything that you're like, fully, I don't want to answer that? Like, I want to keep that as open-ended as possible. Like,
I'm happy to answer anything.
No, but is there anything that you're like, no, I don't, like, there... definitively I want to
like
keep that open
an
ended
kind of.
Yeah,
there is no answer
yeah.
to that question. It's ambiguous,
you know what I mean? Like, any kind of big puzzles that, like, I know some of our fans have been asking, oh, you know, what's happened here? And like, or like, we've been puzzling a lot of the time about cures for ARDA.
Yes.
And I'm kind
Is
of
there
like,
a cure for
yeah,
ARDA?
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? Because I'm like, it's one of those things because where we leave in the season, it is so open-ended.
Yes.
You know, but I guess that's up to you as the GM.
I can answer that question if
yeah?
you'd like.
If you would like, yeah.
There's no cure.
Yeah.
Cool. She eventually will die. How long that takes...
Same.
...is... Yeah.
Relatable.
Yeah.
And just like, as any android as well. Like,
but it, like I wanted to explore this idea of, like, what if, like, there's a character that's had the choice taken away, though. Like, that every android has a choice, a decision, and usually it's, like, every 100 years or so, they go, okay, cool, that's it's done for me. But, you know, and I talked about this with
yeah.
you. But I thought, you know, what does an android do with their time now that it's been chosen for them? And they don't quite know. Maybe at some point she might figure out exactly how long she has. But other than that, it's been a choice that's taken away from her, but she has the decision to help others.
The signal fucked up everybody on the Omenbringer. Would it have done that to the whole of the Pact Worlds, or would it have just triggered the regeneration of all the androids?
What you saw, like, the idea behind that is, like, pretty simple, is that, you know, for every android, triggers a renewal. For everyone else, fucks them up.
Turns them into
It'd
that.
It'd be that on a mass scale.
Cool. That would have been pretty bad.
Catastrophic. Mm.
The whole... And it would have reached across the Pact Worlds, right? That's the idea.
That's the idea.
Okay, so what would you have done if Chris was faster and he pressed the button?
So there is a...
There's
a question about that, isn't there? I want to know. So.
And I'll also just credit them as well, just so we can...
If you have a question that the players also think, guess what? You skip the queue.
Because I need to know. Inquiring minds need to know.
Yeah.
Skiver or Skiver 619. How much different would the ending be if Chris won the role instead of Ellen? Apart from the obvious, of course. The pretty simple is, like, this is what I mean by, from a mechanics perspective, had Chris set off the beacon. First of all, the same thing happens. The chase still occurs because the amount of power that it takes to summon this thing, the thing's going to self-destruct. Like, it's going to explode as a result, right?
So it's going to tear itself apart during activation.
Being able to do that. So that's number
one. And it's also going to wake up all the enemies, right?
Yes. Yeah. So all that stays the same.
Cool.
It becomes a dire ending, though. Like,
that's it. Literally,
he gets what he wants. Everyone gets annihilated. Mm. Like, it would have been like, once I decided that the Cult of a Devourer was involved, and I also accepted that Chris was Zahak was a member of that, I had to accept and factor in the possibility that we have a nihilistic ending. And it would have been the first in Roll of the Cast.
So he would have gotten off, potentially gotten off the Omenbringer, it detonated, and then we just all would have died.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, we have a couple of minutes to spare. What do y'all want to do?
You would have had one more roleplay moment.
And this is my question for Karma as well. Because obviously Pinch is like very, very chaotic, mm-hmm. but to me seems like thinks very much in the now mm-hmm. and not like longer term. Yeah. Like, is on board with the idea of like, oh, this thing is just like going to affect androids. Like, what's that realization that it's like, no, you died too. Like, is Pinch still on board with that? Because I get the sense that he wouldn't be, but I'm not the player or the character.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think there's one moment where I say it in the second to last episode, but it doesn't get... Then a lot's happening, so I don't think it doesn't get delved into.
You say that, you're like... Chris didn't actually answer that. So.
Yeah, I'm like, hang on, I need to do a whatever it was, like, sense motive on Zahak to figure out if we're still on the same side, because very much Pinch, and this is also kind of the reverse of what I was explaining before about why Zahak likes Pinch. The reason Pinch likes Zahak is obviously he serves as really good protection for Pinch, who loves to get himself into dangerous situations and then barely, you know, squeeze out of them. And so he also is not... Pinch didn't have any interest in... He has no interest in other people's kind of religions and other people's, like, you know, that kind of thing. He's never thought to really delve that deep. So he's like, I understand you want to cause destruction and chaos. I'm here for that. And then the
not
second
when destruction and chaos affects me.
The second where yeah, it's like, right. But they're literally what you were saying before we started recording, Ellen, is like once Pitch is like, wait, there are consequences for me. I'm out.
which, if Chris had succeeded in the role, would yeah. have been like you'd have one maybe like 1 minute before yes. Pitch dies to be like, wait,
yeah, exactly.
What the fuck?
I think I don't know what happens in that situation, but I don't know if. Yeah, I don't know if Pinch even is trying to get off the ship at that point. I think he's just trying to comprehend that it, like, the end is coming for him now, and he's like, "Hang on a minute, this is not how it was supposed to go."
Yeah.
So yeah, in that moment, it's like he still appreciates, you know, the connection he's got with Zahark and all of that, but he's like, "Well, hang on, I was here for about 80% of what you were saying, and then you really lost me at the last hurdle." even if there was a way for Pinch and Zahark to have survived and no one else to have survived, Pinch is not interested in a world where there's no conflict for him to fight
yeah,
against. And
yeah.
there's nothing for him to do that's interesting to him.
Yeah.
You know, if there's no one to rob, then, you know, if there's
what's
no one
the point?
If there's no enemy to just escape from, like yeah, barely yeah. make it out of, then it's not exciting for him. So
yeah. What was favorite moments for people?
It's a lot.
It was a very fun season. Absolutely.
Like, I just like all the whooping and cheering at the end is like indicative of how high the stakes were, the tension, everything like flying past, the fact that there was like a mystery, action adventure. Like, it really is just a nice neat little package of like so many of the wonderful staples of sci-fi. I mean, I personally really enjoyed, like I said this before recording, I love Clink. I like again yeah. if Clink has zero fans, I'm dead. But like it was the like in between all the action-packed stuff, I loved the quiet contemplative moments of this season that really kind of like helped cinch into that central theme of legacy and death and meaning and finding meaning even though the end isn't near, or the sword of Damocles is always like hanging over your head. And the little scene between Arda and Clink where Clink is really upset about not being able to find a cure.
Yes, and I was going to highlight that scene.
And they just kind of, they talk it out, and it's a really little lovely meditation on meaning and who we leave behind and how we affect each other's lives.
What being a friend means and like being kind of helpless when you're a friend. I think we can all, yes, it's sci-fi, right? But we can all relate, I think, to sometimes when someone you love, you care about deeply in whatever kind of relationship is going through something and you want to help them, but you don't have the capacity, or it's not a problem that can be helped.
Mm.
It's just something you have to be there for.
Yeah.
It felt very human to me that exploring that with you, it felt really grounded, and I really brought a dimension to the character that I really, really liked.
Yeah.
I personally liked the planet hopping. It's hard to find like moments, but I like the fact that it took us Absalom Station, Eoxian Wastes. Like, I loved the creepy abandoned facility. I thought it was atmospheric as balls. It was great. you know, the diaspora. And the river and the vortex
the space fish.
Yeah, I think you really captured those, like the set pieces, like the feeling of the sci-fi locations. So I loved like turning up somewhere new every time, and just like I found myself over and over again this season just like closing my eyes and just like listening to description and just like really being transported.
Because I spent work on describing this
time.
They
were great. They were really super good. Like every time we arrived somewhere, it was like, oh yeah, tingles. So those were some of my favorite bits, was those exposition moments, the planet reveal when you drop out of hyperspace, you know. Eox. Yeah, that sound.
I really liked the space fish. Space salmon, or spammon, as I'd like to call them. On a serious note, I think the inter-character moments were some of the strongest. I really enjoyed Pinch in the very early moments, jumping up on Zahark's shoulders. And being kind of like 10 foot tall, I thought that was real fun.
He likes to feel tall.
Yeah, he does. Oh, we should be remiss if we didn't base the characters partly on Junkrat and Roadhog from.
I should have said that earlier. That was when I was reading the source book for the first time and reading the Yosoki, and I went, "Hell yeah,
yeah!
This is Junkrat, who's my favorite Overwatch character." And so I was like, "Perfect! I know exactly what I'm doing here."
Nice.
I would also say the
big scary friend,
the ape meat.
Yeah, that was quite fun.
That was good fun. The diatribe that I gave, which one? The fucking prophecy on the ship was a lot of fun. Where I fucking picked up what Sean was putting down. So when the little hologram popped up the first time, and it was about the planet, I think it was. Or no, it was her head.
It was Arda's bust, and then that's but right. It was coming up from the red and black disc.
Yeah, and the red and black disc was the symbol of the Cult of the Devourer. And so I clocked that. Sean went into a nice bit of description, and I was like, "Holy fuck, this is about my character's religion. Fuck yeah, this is gonna be a cool story." And so when we're in the drift, ranting and raving like it's been prophesied, was a lot of fun. Being inside a big tummy.
The best part was I hadn't clued, like me, Karma, had not clued into that being a Cult of the Devourer sign. And so when Chris in character is like, "The prophecy is coming true," Pinch had to be like, "What?" Yeah. "I don't care." Because I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
Oh, that dinner scene, we're like, "So about the cult." How into that are you?
Yeah.
How invested are you?
Are you a practicing cultist?
Do you have a membership?
Is it like high seasons?
Like non-practicing?
Yeah. Are you just a cultural, holidays cultural only. Cult of the Devourer?
Yeah. I absolutely should have fucking spaced you at that point.
Yeah.
Well, your answer is not sufficient. Please get on my ship.
What about you?
Well, that is what I was going to say. As one of mine is the dinner sequence and Pinch stealing everybody else's food is one of my favorite moments. Just because it was, you know, I had that awesome sleight of hand bonus and I used it every chance I got, and so that, and also the very early moment of stealing from the Vesk, who was selling the curry to Arda, where I got my magic space rocks from,
that's right.
Which then became important later on when I used them as a bargaining chip. So I liked that little through line there, but also I just loved the ending sequence. Like, it's also fresh because just listened to it, but I loved that it was a chance to use some of our cool skills and abilities without it necessarily being combat, and doing things that we wouldn't really have the chance to do in combat because you're so focused on
doing
the
damage,
specific
yeah.
end goal. Yeah, we just got time to kind of show off and be fun with it, which I really, really enjoyed.
What is the... I have a question.
Sure.
Going back, what is the deal with Regis saying random words?
Cool. Oh, yeah, that was my question. Because I wrote them all down mean anything.
That is the one thing you missed. Because it's embedded in the season. At the very beginning, when I first described Regis, they were originally taken off market for being buggy.
Right, yeah.
Being very buggy, and you found one. So it's a fucking buggy AI that you've
bad.
Got.
Yeah.
It's just, it's there to make you think there's something, but there's actually not.
Oh,
there's just
I
a buggy
Regis.
AI that I just popped into the beginning there.
And it was like infrequent enough. It's just like, what?
Once you've forgotten about it, I'll bring it back.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there was only maybe three total.
I think so,
because
yeah.
I wrote them down, and then I was looking at this, and I was like, if this means something, we've completely missed a huge clue, because this is not
connecting.
It was my favorite
thing to watch people writing it down. I'd be like, it means fucking nothing, man.
And then we were like, did you just say X? And like, nope.
He'd always be like, I said this, and say the completely normal part, and you're like, okay.
Oh, yeah, I've got Regis banana cascading error?
Banana cascading. Galactic hammer.
Galactic hammer.
Yeah, I guess from that, I think maybe I just assumed, you were...
You're busted.
Shit AI.
Maybe I should have tried to fix you, but
yeah, you never did. So
never
like, did. Keeps
you
going.
Never fixed that.
It's part of the
charm.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was going to say my favorite moment is, like, honestly, it's the fact that you all picked up the breadcrumbs. There's a thing that I'm obviously most like hesitant about on being a GM is being able to, because you want to be subtle with something, so not just spoon feed everything. But it, like, because even from the aspect of like saying, in the holo video with Sifo when you first meet her, there's the orange and yellow like buzzing glow, and then I leave that there, and then I describe in the free markets, and then there's a couple of lights and one of them's buzzing. And for a moment there, you're all like, no, I have no idea. Until Phil finally goes, wait a minute. And yeah. I was like, oh. So it's like moments of elation like that that kind of like validate the storytelling to go, cool, like the Cult of the Devourer stuff, seeing Chris click on that. And also, I think the biggest one for me is ties into Arda's, Ellen's favorite points, because the whole reason, the impetus for me making this story is that I am, death is my number one fear. And I wanted to explore that. I wanted to explore death and legacy and like the ending of everything as a theme.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Because I hate it. So I wanted to explore what that's like. Somebody that knows that their time is ending, and what do they do with that time? Especially when they don't know how much time is left.
Mm.
So I thought that was just very, like, it was good to have characters that can come along with that.
Mm.
But as far as my favorite actual moment, the fucking 10-minute video monologue that I gave that just kind of peppered in the story. That also then peppered in the glass serpent that you all clocked, but then forgot enough that by the time it comes in the end, because like if I pepper it in early enough, they should hopefully forget it, because they'll be engaged by the revelation of art and stuff. Then I can bring it back in.
Forget we did.
Always just assume there's more time.
Yeah, I remember writing down.
We need to go to low power.
We need to go to low power. High power equals danger. Underlining it multiple times and then getting lost in the rest of it and being like, I wonder what I was writing. I'm sure it's not important.
Yeah. I remember seeing everyone write it down. I was like, fuck. Just keep talking. Keep talking. Yeah. Keep going. All right. Should we go into some listener questions?
Let's.
Yes.
Nice.
Okay. Oh. See you guys. Question for Chris mostly. And this is an interesting one because I know what I feel like happens to the characters after. Does Arda make it back to the No Wrong Answers? Basically, what do you envision happened with Arda and Zahark post the ending of the season? And this comes from AZ.
I think the answer to that question is entirely in Ellen's court. Like I said earlier, Zahark's kind of motivations are super shiftable in terms of like how he goes about it. We didn't get a scene with Arda and Zahark alone, which I was kind of gunning for, which had kind of set my character up for in kind of service of the protagonist to do that. So in this moment, I think the answer is, does Arda accurately or effectively espouse the merits of kindness, compassion, love, not giving up, not feeling like trying to make meaning in potentially a meaningless universe, or knowing that there is meaning, or whatever. If she doesn't, Zahark reverts to his nihilism and his apathy and his kind of hate towards the fact that there is no meaning. And if she does, then he has a change of heart. So it's fairly easy to convince Zahark he's wrong.
Nihilism all the way. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm absolutely kidding. No. I think Arda's whole thing is hinged about curiosity and learning, learning about others and trying to squeeze as much out of life as possible. And because of that, she has to believe that people can change. And not only that, there is the actual data that Zahark did save her life. And she saved Zahark's. And,
yes.
And there
they're
is this,
linked.
Exactly. There is this sense there that nothing is ever writ in stone. So, yeah. It would be a very tense you know,
a tense ride back.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is, does Arda make it back? Right? It's like, do you?
Does she drop dead right there?
I think the question is leading at like, does Zahak kill Arda? Yes. Which I don't think he does.
I mean, it's that answer,
still
right?
Put up a fight.
Does she? I mean, Zahak wins in a combat stat wise. Mm-hmm. I've started my character in a really fucked up bullshit way.
I've got some
way.
Pretty good spells.
I think strength 16 does. Yeah. I don't know.
But you think he would come to that?
No, and that's my thing. It could. It depends. It's really on, you know, Arda as a character to espouse the merits of being a good person. If she doesn't do it well and doesn't convince him, then he kills her and eats her and flies off to probably find Pinch and try and find the cult again. If she does, then he becomes tempered and begins an existential crisis, which is
losing his faith and would go through a whole
and is guided by her towards something different, something else.
Takes some convincing to let Clink back, have Clink let him back on the ship.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because in my head, if we were to ever go towards a season two, I would love to like look at a version of it where they actually did at the ending of the season find that they went their separate ways, like all four.
Yeah.
But it would be in the same groupings as the chase. Like, it would be like what happens in the year that there are Zahak and Arda adventures and where they learn to like deal, because they're intrinsically linked now and they need to navigate through that. It's literally the adventures of Regis and Clink for a while. And Dex. Like, and it's this Dex. Weird trio, right? Yeah. And then, like, does Pinch, like, what would it be like Pinch without Zahak for a while? Mm. Whether it's back with the Free Captains or doing their own thing. Like, then there's interesting stories you could tell individually before you then bring them all back together. Mm. Which I think would be fascinating to, like...
Get in the comments. Request a season two.
Yeah. There's always, you know, the feeling with games like this, because they're usually geared to like groups to play casually for years to come, you know, that a party coming apart like that and a story going in separate ways is like a big no-no. You can't tell that kind of story, but we don't really have that issue. We can have, even if we did come back for a season two, like you say, we can have the characters grow independently for a while before bringing them back, or bring back slightly different characters.
Yeah,
there's a lot you can do with it when you're not kind of tied to it being like a home game where everyone has to participate every single week.
That was definitely something I really enjoyed about the season in general, and enjoyed about it being a product for entertainment, was knowing there was a finite ending, obviously, like especially for Chris and I's characters and stuff like that. It does just open it up so more to be like, we can be evil. We can be fucking evil. Yeah. Because it doesn't matter that we stay together for, like you said, years and years.
Yeah.
What matters is we tell an interesting one shot of a story.
Yes. So. Yeah. Speaking of which, AZ continues on. This is a question for Phil.
Oh.
How does it feel to still be the DM with the PC kills?
Yeah.
You wait.
Look, this obviously has been commented on quite a few times. Look, I don't go out to kill people. I try to make a good challenge. I try to make it dangerous where it's supposed to be dangerous. And sometimes people die.
He's being modest, guys. He's the evil one at the party.
We've had a lot of close calls. We were just talking today about we had several close calls in Pulp Cthulhu. So Sean Neely offed at least one character there, but we just... Like, and one was not ass pull like from you, but like ass pull from the mechanics, like just you know, scraping the bottle of barrel of
the mechanic version of holding on by your fingertips.
It was
literally a 50-50 chance whether Chris survived among the dust or not.
Yeah, when we true.
Came down to one roll.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm ready for other people to start doing the killing.
Hey, I tried.
Here I go killing again.
Yeah.
and I still haven't died. I would like to die. That would be great.
Don't worry, Phil. It will happen.
Hey, I got news for you, buddy.
It's coming for us all.
I got some good news. I got some bad news.
Oh, sick.
And you didn't like Zahak as a character.
The shit sandwich.
The real life Zahak. No, I was saying there was some bleed that Clink. Clink was mad at Zahak. Mm. And I felt that for like a week after recording.
Yes.
I like Zahak as a character. I think it's great. concept.
We've answered part of this, but this comes from Arimathias. By the way, all of this comes from our Roldcast Discord, so get in the Roldcast Discord
to
ask these sorts of questions. So yeah, Zahark's emergence as a devourer cultist feels like an interesting part of the story that at first was almost an exposition machine and then as quasi-antagonist. Was this something planned from the start? If not, how did Zahark's revelation with the plot involve? We've kind of answered that. We've touched on how I kind of formulated the story and then kind of retrofitted it to Zahark's involvement with the cult. And just to touch on that as well, is that there was a version of a story where it actually was the Eoxians.
Right.
Because it just makes sense. They can be utilized as well. They're kind of tied to life and death and the undead as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And then with the emergence of Zahark and the cult, I go, well, it still makes sense to use them as a smokescreen. Because everyone would believe that it's the Eoxians.
Yeah,
of course they would.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So it made sense. There was a time when you all still thought it was.
Yes.
You distrusted the Eoxians from the beginning and I was like, good.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. I mean, they're inherently kind of like
suspicious types.
Yeah.
They're undead.
They're undead. They, yeah. they have
necromancers.
Their values are kind of an inversion of your standard heroic trope. So naturally, you're like, I'm not sure these guys are on the level.
I was going to say there's the because death is so interwoven in this story, but there's the thing of subverting death, but like it's not just a challenge over death. It's a question of meaning and a welfare of life rather. So you have that kind of like. Juxtaposition of you know the characters, so it's natural for all of the characters to be like these Eoxians are a bit fucked. Even if we also want to combat death, this is not the way.
Yeah, I mean, the more I spoke to them, the more the kind of sympathetic they seem.
Well, yeah, and the Eoxians as well were the first to join the pact.
Yeah,
they were the first planet to be like, yeah, we'll join, we'll engage in mutual trade and security, and everyone's like, really?
I still don't trust them.
I'm the opposite. I was on board from the time that there was the moment where Arda spoke to them privately, and you spoke to the leader privately.
Gevalask,
and he gives back
he
gave back the data pad straight away, and he was like, "I just wanted to look at it. Everything's good." Like, I was like, "Yeah, okay."
This was a data pad of a very close friend of mine.
Yes, and it's also like, it's not their fault they're skeletons. You know? It's not their fault they just want to live.
They're so spooky.
I mean, it kind of is.
It's a choice.
I don't mean to be skeleton racist, but it is kind of their fault.
You're being bonus.
Being bonus.
They just wanted to live a little longer.
But jumping
it's
back.
Very sympathetic,
that
yeah.
That question as well. It was fairly easy. I think Sean and I have played together for nearly 4 years now, right?
Yeah,
so
about that.
I can pick up what he's putting down pretty quick. And I knew my role about that time when I knew the sigil. I was like, oh, I understand now. I kind of get what I'm supposed to do in this game. Let's see if what that is in kind of full depth. But I kind of had a heads up.
Yeah. And as I said, I'm just trying to get down to that one moment of the standoff, and I fucking got it.
You got that.
Also by Arimathias, how does it feel playing a sci-fi setting with almost entirely unadjusted magic? From my perspective, it sat a little awkwardly, but I'm curious what the play and thematic experience of it was like. Also worth mentioning, this is science fantasy, to be specific.
Yeah.
So it's a very deliberate melding of tech and magic. Kind of like sci-fi themes. So it definitely sits in science fantasy rather than a strict sci-fi like a Blade Runner or a Star Trek.
It felt like more technologically based, the season.
I definitely leaned more into that.
Yes. It was labs and experiments, and there's a little bit of mysticism, and obviously there were spells, and we kind of revered our gods. We made sure that was kind of in there. So I don't know if that makes the magic stuff a bit awkward, that we pushed it aside or something. But I didn't feel like it was a weird fit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think because the whole setting is based around that idea, it's entirely consistent to me. So I don't really mind it.
Yeah. Reminds me of Star Wars, of just like, you know, you have your space cowboys and your space wizards, and the both of them have an equal place in the story. And and not only that, it's a really good way to play off people's beliefs, because you know you have people who go, I've never been, the universe is so vast that it's like, well, I've never been touched by this is like not part of my culture or faith or religion or anything like that, and you can have someone, you know, across the stars who goes, well, this is baked into my culture and it always has been, and this is just a different way that the world works for us. So yeah, I always see it being kind of part and parcel, as well as like a lot of the magic I used was kind of techno.
Yours was very tech-based,
so
yeah.
It kind of made sense as an android. So
and it is a setting that lends itself to go, here's a lot of tech, here's a lot of magic. You can choose what part you engage with to tell your story. And so I deliberately honed in on a specific set.
That's definitely what I did. I didn't want to be a magic user character. But I was also, as someone who likes the technology side of it more, it was very easy to go, well, there's aliens and there's, you know, hundreds of different planets with different species. Some of them have powers that not everyone will understand. If you want to call that magic, cool. Otherwise, it's just a type of technology that's like a little bit more abstract than ours. Yeah. You know?
I also just love the kind of license it gives the creators. I love things like the Vortex and the Diaspora and the whole idea of Eox and remixing undead into their own planet nation thing. I think it's worth any kind of awkwardness to get that kind of creativity.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely not science fiction in the strictest. It's space fantasy. Yeah. It's a space opera.
It's not The Expanse, right?
No. It's closer, like you say, to Star Wars or to...
You have the Force and...
To Mass Effect, where there are psionics, or even something like Warhammer 40K or Star...
Yes. Yeah.
StarCraft, you know, where there are psionics or things like that. Yeah. Or the warp. Or,
science fantasy is definitely where it sits. Yeah. And I'll pay my respects to some of the people who have asked questions that we've kind of answered a little bit. If we have any little extra little bits, we'll rock through some of these. So Hurricane Hawk asked us the same question that they've asked us on previous iterations of this show. What was your favorite single piece of roleplay from the season? We've touched on a few of those. Are there any other highlights that we wanted to bring up?
I really enjoyed the murder talk. That was fun. Being able to go full nihilist on a character is a delight to play. I don't get to do it terribly often.
Yep.
So that was fun.
I loved every piece of Regis interaction I got to do. I feel like especially also
love that little robot.
Also flexing like the capabilities of Regis, especially like developing a friend in Arda, I think was fun. I think Regis giving Arda advice was one of my personal favorites of the season.
Mm. I like the free captains. I thought they were cool characters with cool voice work. Yeah. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Lots of pinch just doing stupid shit. It's very fun. Like, you know, just the whole, I still can't get over guns in the mouth pouch because, like, I believe I asked and you said there's, like, no, like, there's no, like, the safety's not off.
Oh, no,
like,
no.
They're ready to fire.
I need the fastest access possible.
I was like, I'm wondering if there's, like, a crit fail, whether a gun will, like, just shoot through Pitch's cheek or something. I was ready for that kind
ready
of chaos.
Ready for antics. Yeah.
And of course, Pinch with the space rocks and how devastated he was when he needed to give them up.
His only, like, genuine moment, honestly.
I know. It was so funny and so sweet. And I was here for it.
But my favorite is conversation.
Yeah. I just remember you giving, like, a little fist bump afterwards. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, fist bump.
There's an extra aspect of his question that Tiger Claw asked. So first, why did Zahark and Pinch join the No Wrong Answers? And did their characters have any inkling of the importance of Arda Prime? I would say from the get-go, no. Because
definitely not the importance of her. That never even crossed Pinch's mind at all.
I think you joined us because I advertised for crew on the on the Absalom station and you answered.
I was going to say, for Pinch, the answer is what it always is, which is money.
Yeah.
It seemed
credits.
Like it seemed like a great place to just bunker down for a bit while I'd left the free captains. I didn't have a lot else going on. And...
A lot of it's still morally grey, so it's not like you're going straight. Like, there's still like certain things you do that are like, this isn't technically
joining
lawful.
This crew was never him thinking this is the end of my life of crime. It was like, well, maybe it's a little bit more legit, but ultimately these people are looking into... Clearly you guys have already starting to look into some very mysterious stuff around Arda, and he wants to see where that might lead, and it might get him somewhere interesting.
I think as well, they're adventurers. They go on adventures. They've gone on adventures before. And adventurer is just a fancy way of saying a murder tourist. we go to strange new planets and we kill people there. So Zahark is down for that. Plus, they don't seem to be terribly emotionally intelligent when it comes to sensing motives.
Neither of us.
Yeah, I think that would have been a win for
both
of us.
Which is pretty fucking great. I can imagine the meeting where it's like, oh, cool, I've got a bead on you guys. Well, I'm just going to move my shit in. And it, and there might have been a tiny bit of like, oh my goodness, that's moving past. It's like, okay, yeah. Where are we going next? Yeah. Right, and it's just like push past.
We
and
settled kind of, in like we've been there forever.
Yeah.
Direct these two. Don't you think?
Yeah. It must be a cultural thing.
Yeah, and those sorts of excuses and that sort of thing. I can imagine that's the kind of context of like
Pinch liking that he can be his true bizarre self and people aren't going to question it for the first time.
It fits in.
I'm not
the weirdest person on this
show. I'm not the weird one. I love it.
And I think you discovered what importance Arda had, like, along with the rest of us.
Of course,
us, right?
Yes. At the same time, the wheel
with
did,
Arda.
Really.
The Overarchiver asks, for me, was it planned for Seafeld to die? And if not, what plans or interactions involving her could we have gotten to see if she had survived the free market shootout? That was one of those things that I accounted for. It was, if Seafeld dies, Seafeld dies. If Seafeld doesn't, she leads you to the Eoxian embassy. She gets like taken away into like deep undercover. They're there to protect her, right? So she's like taken in by the Eoxian.
She's in the witness protection.
Yeah, exactly. She gives you the data pad freely, but doesn't get time to like give you the importance of it before they whisk her away because she's still in fucking danger. Mm. And then you would have actually gotten a message from Gevalask Noah during like later in the adventure because the way that transmissions work is they're not live. You get them is that she was assassinated.
So she does die.
She will die.
The plan is for her to die.
And then what I was hoping at that point is if you get that message from Gevalask Noor, you then suspect the Eoxians again.
Yeah, that would have turned us fully
back to the Eoxians and you're on Eox. So then just that was that little thing that I was going to put in. But because she died, I'm like, oh, this kind of saves me having to do that.
Does she feel bad about what she did?
Oh, yeah. The reason that
she seems
remorseful.
She's
pretty remorseful, yeah.
She's remorseful and, like, couldn't even look at Arda.
Yeah.
I remember that whole sequence
early on. I just
thought
she was android
racist. Literally, I was like, she's got something about androids. Turns out it was just Arda.
Which is like, yeah, but I was totally, like, oh, yep, this is my first experience because, like, people find androids weird and off-putting, and I was like, ah, cool, this is like, you know, not a new experience.
No, it's that person I tortured.
And how was I to suspect if you guess
androids
that right off the bat, you're a fucking
what
paranoid.
What if you just gone
rank
up to her and been like, you did this to me, didn't you?
Did what? She doesn't even know.
People do find androids weird and annoying. We should get rid of them. Find some way of getting rid of all of them at the same time.
Man, if you hadn't
plus
have engaged with that.
Every fucking other person on the fucking universe ever.
Yeah, that's fine.
I loved
just
when
new
I
universe, new
it
universe.
Reminds me so much of Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm like, why would you care if the universe is
because I'm one of the idiots who lives in it.
See, fucking, yeah.
But I loved, there's that moment. Actually, that might be a question I have for you, Chris.
Yo.
Real quick, were you just straight up lying to Pinch? Because I ask in that moment.
Yes.
Pinch, yes, Pinch, this is my question too.
Oh, great. I was like, Pinch doesn't want to die. Does Zahak have a way out for the two of them? And your only answer was,
Zahak is not suicidal.
Zahak is not suicidal. And then you refused to say any more.
So
what was that about?
Here's two answers
like
to that question.
Cooling, right?
Here's two answers to that question. One, Chris misunderstood what Sean was talking about and fundamentally did believe that it would only be the androids.
Right.
So my whole turn on Zahak, you didn't understand why it was happening?
I thought that was a legitimate question, and I thought I had the read of the situation.
I see.
And so I was like, oh, no, it will just be the androids. It's cool. And then my in-character, Chris is not misunderstanding Sean.
The canon reason.
Is, no, Zahak is not suicidal. You detected that correctly. So we're going to escape through the fucking portal that springs up every 6 months.
That's a gamble, but yeah, you could have,
He's like, I have predicted it will open in the next 4 seconds.
Yeah.
what if it doesn't? Well, you won't be able to do anything about it.
Yeah, you won't know any different.
Pinch goes, and what if it doesn't? And Zahak's like, then it will be too late.
Yeah.
I thought you were just doing like a semantic dodge where you're like, I'm not suicidal. Well, I'll die as a consequence.
Well, I'm not suicidal. Like, I'm homicidal.
Yeah. Or just like, you know, would if that's your greater calling.
Yeah.
Like, that's not suicide. Like, you know, would
that's
you,
self-sacrifice.
Would you see the ascension, you know, being... what I mean? Like, I saw it on
that
term.
In-character assumption was he means it as He will go to whatever afterlife the cult of the Devourer believes in.
Yes.
And that's Pinch realizing, I'm not part of your fucking religion. I'm going to die.
Yeah, so, where do
wait a minute.
Yeah. Are there plus ones?
Plus one to heaven? Or
yes, there are. New universe, baby.
We got a few other comments that were less questions, but were more like lovely, positive affirmations. Aww. That we've got from people.
Let's read them out, and shall we?
We will quickly rocket through them because we are heading over time.
Oh, no.
So one of them comes from Over Archiver, which is a particular favourite was Zahark, episode 16. That's all they'll say because spoilers. Listen to the episode if you haven't. I can't remember what
this whole
moment.
Thing
That's
is
fine.
A spoiler.
Absolutely chilling. Also, the finale was really cool, especially in terms of mechanics, which usually isn't the main reason I listen to RTC, brackets, the characters and story moments and all that are, but they absolutely shined, whatever, you get the point.
I feel like 16 is where you convince Dr. Spoon that all is lost.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It's like, messed up.
Wow, that's dark.
It's messed up, yeah.
A couple of the other ones, let's just rocket through those like a spaceship. Really loved how the chase mechanics played out. That was by Jason Elilis. The Over Archiver also said, the whole sequence was awesome. In particular, I love how the players directly affected the narrative, described the areas they found themselves in, etc.
Oh, didn't someone ask where you got that from?
Jason Ellis asks this question.
Jason Ellis. I changed it up a bit, but it comes from Starfinder's first adventure path, which is Dead Sons, which is, again, a whole story around the cult of a devourer. Completely different from that, there's a whole chase sequence where they're being chased by dinosaurs. They're on Castrofel, the jungle planet, and they're chased by dinosaurs, and it's a stampede, essentially. And so I took the both tables, one for the GM, and one for the players, and I changed up a few of them, changed the wording of a few of them, changed some of the stats, but the thing was basically the same. You have to get 12 successes between the four of you for certain things, and that's how you got it. So that's where I got it from. I grabbed that because that was my sulfur. I always knew I wanted you to face a horde, but I didn't know how to do that without just going into combat against 1,000 people.
Without creating total party kill.
And I also didn't want to do like a Pulp Cthulhu style like chase sequence. And then I found these mechanics when I deep dived into the book. I was like, fucking perfect.
I was also wondering, so Skyver619 asks, is Pinch gone forever? Rejoin the Free Captains. Maybe they turn him in for a bounty. Does he regroup with the No Long Answers? Is it up for me to decide on my headcanon? So what do you think Pinch does next?
If you would like to make your own third party story,
if you would like to tell
Pinch.
Me what Pinch does next, I am taking suggestions. I don't, to narrow it down slightly, because I don't know exactly what he does, but I don't.
It's because he doesn't know.
Yeah, he very rarely knows what he's about to do next until it's happening, and then he's like, ooh, okay, I'm in the middle of something. I don't think he fully rejoins the Free Captains because they're a bit too structured for him. He doesn't love all those rules.
The Free Captains, not free enough.
No, not free enough. He's like, you don't want me to betray you guys, and I can't hold to that. I'm not committing to that.
Don't pin me down like that.
Yeah.
Wow, you asked for so much.
He's like, sure, I'll be a Free Captain, fingers crossed behind his back. But yeah, other than that,
so whatever the wear of the wind blows.
Yeah, honestly, whatever looks the most enticing next.
Wherever he literally just goes to another planet and tries to
probably,
start again.
Probably, yeah.
That pretty much brings us to the end of a season. First of all, thank you guys so much for coming along with the story and making it very fucking easy to tell a sci-fi
story.
So well
told.
Yes.
And it like gets to a point where it's like, oh, there was just moments where I could just literally step back and let you guys roleplay, and that's so much fun and like so much of a privilege to be able to do. Just be like, oh cool, they know their characters, they know the story, I can just let them fucking roll.
And a big congratulations to you, Sean, because you not only ran the game, you also edited the game. You edited the podcast, which I would be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity. If you, listener out there, loved this season, consider going to our Patreon so we can financially support Sean and his
Herculean effort.
Every episode roughly takes 2 to 3 times that long to edit it. Is that about right, Sean?
Like,
there you go.
Goodness. He's so tired.
I would say minimum 4 hours.
There you go.
Max 6.
There you go. Every episode. So if you
all those
like
cool
that,
sound effects you heard, all that growling from the zombies.
He did that. He did some Sean, Foley for this episode. That's Sean growling in the last.
That's me and my other housemate Hjalmar. We spent just 10 minutes in here going.
As you do.
Did I help at all?
I kept yours in.
In spirit. Yeah.
So if you want to support that, if you want to congratulate that or thank that, head to our Patreon. We really, really appreciate it. Every single member of our Patreon has our thanks, our gratitude, and our love. So thank you to everyone who supported us and made this season possible.
But of course, we aren't done. Let's talk about what's going to be happening over the next couple of weeks. So for those of you in the know, after the postseason episode, we always have an interview episode, and we do have that lined up. we better have. And so myself and Ellen will be sitting down with James L. Sutter. Now, James L. Sutter was there from the very beginning of Starfinder, involved with Paizo Publishing between 2004 and 2017 as their very first creative director for the Starfinder game, and was essential in launching the game from the ground up and their early creative direction. So we'll get to talk to them on where they were, what they did, and where they are now. Great way to kind of just delve into the mind of another creative mind behind your favorite TTRPGs.
Yeah, we love doing that.
But the and week then. After that, I will pass over to Ellen to talk about what is going to be season 9.
Yes, yeah, so it's back to me. It's my seat, my turn in the GM seat again for Roll2Cast, and we will be doing Die, the RPG written by Kieran Gillen, illustrated by Stephanie Hans, and produced by Rowan Rook and Deckard Games. It is a dark fantasy about very, very flawed people in the real world who sit down to play a tabletop role-playing game and find that the game is playing them a little bit.
Goth Jumanji.
It's Goth Jumanji. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. And not only we bid adieu to our wonderful guest, Karma, who has been amazing, as always. It's always a pleasure to have him here in the studio. And we will be welcoming two new guest players, which is very, very exciting.
Two more Adelaide-based performers.
Yes, yep. Yes, yes. We have Max Garcia Underwood.
Who may remember that voice.
Exactly. That yeah, that name. He has somewhat appeared on Roll2Cast before because he scored our season of The Witcher, TTRPG. His beautiful music scores that season. And we have Luna Godfrey, who is an amazing Adelaide-based TTRPG person. You might know her as Lou Boffin on Twitch. She's recently done a whole slew of Jasper's Game Day, but yeah, very, very, very awesome TTRPG person. And yeah, so it's a new for Roll2Cast because we've got two guest stars. So
two for the price of one.
I know. Yeah, we got a great deal. Great deal. It was a good get. Good find. So yeah, that will be after our interview. So stay tuned for that.
So thank you all so much. Thank you, Karma. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
We're looking forward to seeing you next week and then beyond that for another season.
Woo.
We'll see you all later.
Tell a friend.
Bye.
You have been listening to Among the Dust, which is a Roll2Cast production. The best way to find us is on Twitter, Discord, and our Patreon. All our podcasts are on Acast, Spotify, YouTube, and all good podcatchers. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/Roll2Cast. Starfinder and all associated properties are trademark of Paizo Incorporated, authorized through Paizo's community use policy. The way I kind of envision it is I'm thinking of three things simultaneously. So I've got that melody and I'm not sure what... Instrumentation's hard, so I kind of just have to go by the pitch of my voice. Now, I don't like that triplet, actually. No, see, I don't like that. Bum ba ba dum ba dum ba dum 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 ba dum ba dum dum ba dum ba dum 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 ba ba dum ba dum ba dum 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 ba dum ba dum dum ba dum ba dum 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 ba dum ba dum. No, I don't like it going down either. See, that's what I mean. What's my trial and error is like, and you might find what works better. But I believe it's more bum ba ba dum ba dum ba dum dum ba ba dum dum ba dum ba dum 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 ba dum ba dum ba dum 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 ba dum ba dum dum ba dum ba dum 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 dum. Ah, every time. One sec. Dum ba ba dum ba dum ba dum 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 dum. I imagine that going over it. There you go. That's a wild process.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.